Hello, everybody, indeed. Welcome to the Anavision Podcast, episode 326. I'm Jero, joined by Steve.
Up.
And Amaro.
Sup, sup.
On today's show, we'll be talking a little bit about the Marvel news out of San Diego Comic-Con. We'll also be talking about some manga news and then also some video game impressions on Stray and Live Alive. And then we're also going to be covering a couple more shows from the summer 22 season that had not debuted by the time we released our preview episode. So let's get into the Marvel news first. A lot of announcements regarding the rest of Phase 4 in the MCU, going all the way into the start of Phase 6, which I believe is 2024. So we had a lot of new movie announcements, including Ant-Man and the Wasp, Quantumania, and Guardians Volume 3 trailer for Wakanda Forever, which is that the end of Phase 4? Wakanda Forever, or is it something else?
I believe they said Wakanda Forever, because yes, we're getting She-Hulk and then Wakanda Forever this year.
Okay. All right.
And that's it.
Yeah, so, and then a combination of TV shows and movies. Loki is getting a season 2. Agatha from WandaVision is getting a show later in 2023. Daredevil with Charlie Cox and Vincent D'Onofrio. And also Fantastic Four in a couple years. And then a couple of Avengers movies, including the Kang Dynasty and Secret Wars, much further down the road.
It's also interesting to know about the Avengers movie. They're not being directed by the Russo brothers.
Yeah.
They're going to be directed by...
Mm-hmm. They publicly said that they would love to do a Secret Wars movie.
Yeah. But they're going to be doing... it's going to be directed by the same guy who did Shang-Chi. So...
All right. And that, I like that one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think it would be interesting to see his take on a big... And the thing is, like, the Russo brothers took over for, like, Joss Whedon, you know, after the first two Avengers movies. And I think everybody loves Endgame and Infinity War even more than like the first two. So, you know, I think it's exciting to see what, you know, new blood will bring to the franchise.
I think it's interesting, but we always have to put a little bit of caveat, like asterisks by these announcements, because, well, I mean, there were a lot of changes when they announced other things like Inhumans, and it was originally going to be one, or it was going to be like the way they were going to split up the Avengers movie was going to be different. And, yeah, you know, it's always going to possibly be changes. Keep that in mind. Like, some of the interesting things to note is no Daredevil announcement, even though we already heard that they are working on something.
What do you mean Daredevil? Daredevil's getting...
Not Daredevil. Deadpool. Already heard that they're working on something for Deadpool. Of course, they, if you watched Miss Marvel, you know that they already hinted at the fact that she's a mutant, right?
Mm-hmm.
So the question is, like, we're not seeing anything from any of the mutant stuff. I know, you know, that we're seeing Fantastic Four now. Maybe they're planning to do mutants, you know, once Fantastic Four is really introduced. That could be a thing. But it is curious to see some of these announcements. Blade, I think, is the most interesting one. Because, like, are they going to go R on Blade? I don't think they will.
I think we'll, that'll be the question everyone's wondering for Deadpool, right?
Well, no, they did say that for Deadpool. So that was one of the things they said.
Okay.
So that was one of the things Ryan Reynolds actually said. He said, not only are they committed to doing Daredevil movie, they're going to, you know, keep it as the original two had, which is awesome. Daredevil. I keep saying Daredevil. I know. Deadpool. It's interesting, though. I think, obviously, we're seeing them test the waters already by putting not only the more mature Netflix series on there, including Punisher, but they're also then recently put on both the Deadpool movies and
Logan
on Disney Plus. So you definitely see them kind of experimenting on the more mature aspect. I do love that there was apparently some moms raging against the fact that there was rated R material on Disney Plus. Yeah. I was like, well, I guess you didn't notice the Punisher. But yeah, I'm curious to see some of these. I think there's definitely a lot that's cool. I love that we're finally getting Daredevil again, but 2024 is quite a long way. I know we're going to get like a little bit of him in what seems like probably just a cameo, really, She-Hulk.
Yeah.
But
I was going to say, speaking of She-Hulk, what do you guys think of the... Because there was a new trailer that came out.
I'm looking forward to it. I think it'll be a lot of fun. It's like a half hour, like a more... It's supposed to be more comedic in nature, right, than what you typically get out of the Marvel stuff, right? So I'm interested to see it.
Yeah, and they're fully embracing her breaking the fourth wall,
which
I think is really nice. And, you know, like, just in case anyone was out there is listening, he's like, oh, they're copying Daredevil. Or not. Shit, no, I'm doing it.
Deadpool.
Deadpool. <Yeah. laughs> She-Hulk did it first. But no, yeah, I think it looks really funny. I think once people are watching it in HD and not on YouTube trailers that are compressed, the CG will look better. There was actually this video from Corridor Crew. Have you guys ever seen their videos on YouTube?
Yeah, of course. I mean, who doesn't watch Corridor?
Yeah, they have like millions of views or whatever. But they were talking about the special effects and how, like, the compression is what kind of made it look so bad on, you know, in the trailers, and that, like, people are more forgiving for the CG on, like, Hulk, because he's got, like, facial stubble and you know, it's more detailed, whereas, like, with She-Hulk, it just looks very smooth. And so, you know, I think once you start watching it, you'll stop thinking about how it looks and just pay more attention to the characters and the story and the comedy, and, you know, I think it looks really funny.
Yeah. If there's nothing else, then we'll get into our next story here, which is the app called Manga Up, which I believe is owned by Square Enix, that they use to release manga. In the U.S., recent chapters have been littered with absurd censorship. So you look at a lot of these pages, like, you can go on their website and there's some chapters for free. Like, for example, I'm looking at the Vermilion Gold manga right now, and there's these lazy black boxes over Vermeil in a lot of these images. And it's one thing, like, she's naked in these scenes, but it still looks really bad. But you get into some of the other manga in the series, and you're talking about a girl is just wearing a shirt and pants, and they censored a very specific area of the pants. And it just, I don't know which manga this is.
I think it's, I traveled through time and confessed to my high school teacher crush or something like that.
Oh, okay.
Some silly manga, but, like, the point is the censorship is horrible. And like, it's not even just the censorship, because, like, you can tell that it's there's a lot of strong hints that they have a bot that's doing it. It's basically going through, and anytime it recognizes any, like, Y patterns, you know, for, like, the curves of breasts or, you know, the crotch area or whatever, it just blocks the whole area. There was evidence that it was even censoring the letter Y in some cases.
Oh. I love the knee.
It censored a character's knee because, like, of course it was round, so, you know, maybe it looked like a breast or something. I don't know. But, like, the most insulting thing about this whole thing is that it's a freemium service. So keep in mind, like, this is a brand new service that was launched overseas. I believe Japan has already had Manga Up for a while, but they launched it, and so you can read free chapters, but then they do this thing where you have, like, a daily limit of 8 chapters that you can read, and if you want to read any more, you have to pay, like, an in-app currency to do so. But then they have the gall to separate chapters into separate like blocks, right? So like you'll get chapter 1, part 2, part 3, part 4, but it's all the same chapter. It's absolutely disgusting is what it is.
Mm-hmm. Like I was sitting there thinking, like when you first started talking about it, I was like, well, you know, you gotta pay for things, that's fine. But then you're like, oh, but they're separating them into blocks of the same chapter. That's ridiculous.
Yeah, and then not only that, but like once you do pay for the chapter to like read it or whatever, it's on a rental basis, so you don't even own it. Mm. And like what makes it so bad is that you have competitors out there like Bookwalker or like just even Amazon Kindle or whatever, where when you buy a volume, you own it. You know, like regardless of whether it's like, as long, you know, it's one of those things where it's like, yeah, it's digital, so you never really own digital stuff.
Yeah.
But there's no time limit.
Well, any digital content, just as a fun fact here, you don't own any of your digital content. You're only technically leasing it for as long as the service allows you to have it or as it exists.
Yeah, but, you know, it's the however long Amazon Kindle exists versus, like, the three-day time limit on Square Enix's manga is completely different.
Yeah, I know, but I just want to add that. Yeah, I think it's ridiculous. I think even some of the excuses they used was like, well, you know, it's some countries don't allow this. I'm like, well, then block it from that country, right?
Yeah.
Like, I think it's just, to me, the censorship is so extreme that their thought is, well, you know, we're going to lose money in the Saudi Arabia area. All I'm thinking is like, the U.S. is your market. Europe is your market. Make your money there, and you block and censor this stuff like this, you're going to lose 10 times more, you know, of customers that actually might buy your stuff than even have gained. Simply because you can have it in Saudi Arabia. And let's be honest, like, the people who don't want this content in Saudi Arabia are the adults, not the people who are actually buying it. So they themselves are going to buy it and look at this and go, I don't want this. It's stupid.
I think people brought up, like, Saudi Arabia as a joke or whatever, but, like, it's definitely China, you know?
Yeah.
Like, right. Chinese censorship. Yeah, Middle East and China is definitely, but still, like, the people in China who would get this content will not want it, right?
Yeah.
So you're only allowing it to be put there, but no one's going to want it still.
I don't buy the, you know, we had to censor it to meet, like, certain platforms, strict whatever, you know, things. Because, like, to me, that's bullshit because, like, you have Manga Plus, which is by Shueisha, because they have like the Shonen Jump stuff on there. So you have manga like Ayakashi Triangle, which I am reading and enjoying on a weekly basis. which I'm going to show you some pictures to my colleagues here, and be like, this is on the app for free, and I want you to notice something too. That was a screen cap that I took. Right. Mm-hmm. So the Manga Up app threatens to ban you if you try to take a screenshot.
Boy, they just make every wrong decision.
Here's the problem. Here's the issue with your I don't know what your point is, because if you just look at Manga Plus, it is not available in places like China. So it feels
exactly like
Ubisoft just Ubisoft tried to get it in China because I figured maybe they thought they'd make an exponential amount of money there. And so maybe that was their reasoning behind it. So, but my like, the problem with that problem is, like, if you really wanted it for China, you should have just released a China-only app and then done your censorship there instead of censoring it for the rest of the world. Like, again, Manga Plus is not available in China, so they don't have to, you know, abide by any silly censorship rules. It's probably also not available in, again, Middle Eastern countries and places like that who have very big, you know, oh, we can't have this there. So I just, it's, to me, like, what Shueisha did make 1,000% make sense. What Ubisoft did doesn't make sense.
Yeah.
And it probably was some executive that was just like, China money, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but even with, like, I've been playing Azur Lane the past few months, and when they release new ship girls in China, they have, you know, various, like, fog and stuff over the ports and stuff. But in America and Japan, they release as normal. So at least there, it's not like we have to suffer, all of us have to suffer through their censorship and stuff. And there's just so much about this app, like, that we've talked about that's just completely awful for the user experience. That why would you make all of these decisions if it's gonna, like, it, like, why would I ever subscribe to this? Why would anybody ever subscribe to this?
Well, and to be fair, it's not a subscription service. It's like a,
or, you know, like a access premium, or something.
But, yeah, why would you use this instead of just pirating something, right?
Yeah.
And mm-hmm. and I think that's the biggest, like, that's the biggest thing that anime distributors and manga publishers have learned, is that you have to make access easy because people will pirate stuff, you know. And what really sucks about Square Enix just being Square Enix on this is that they have the license to a lot of manga that people really love, like Fullmetal Alchemist, Soul Eater. You know, they published My Dress Up Darling, which was really popular just recently.
Mm-hmm.
If you can't afford or have the space for physical books, then your only option is digital. And right now it's like, you know, the free option is not great. You know, like, it's mm-hmm. not, it's not just not great, it sucks.
Yeah.
So
yeah. To be fair too, as well, I will, like, okay, and when I say to be fair, I'm not defending this behavior. I'm at least justifying some of it in the fact that this is their first attempt, right? They've never really done anything like this before. So they had clearly not done their research, or clearly didn't hire the right people to advise them on this. So hopefully this will crash and burn in whatever V2 that they're definitely not going to call it manga up, because they don't want to keep that name probably anymore mm-hmm. after all the bad press. Hopefully that'll be better.
All right, and we have a couple video games to give impressions on. We'll start off with Stray. Steve, you've been playing this. It's been pretty popular since it came out.
Yeah, so I mean, this is more than an impression. It's a full-on review because I did beat it. It's a relatively short game. It only takes about 5 hours or so to beat. Short experience. It costs $30. If you have the premium, what's it called?
Like PlayStation Extra and
Plus Extra, yeah, whatever service. You get it for free. So it's a part of the service. So, I would say, just based on its time frame, how long it took me to beat, the thought of going back to, there's no replay value here in my mind. That doesn't mean it's a bad game. I'll get into that later. I definitely think, though, if you have the PlayStation Plus whatever subscription, the advanced level subscription that gets you it, it's definitely worth playing. I'll just go ahead and open with that. I also, the only reason why I really bought it was because I sat there and I saw it and I was like, you know, my nephews will probably love this, and I can get it on, buy it one time, and it'll be available on both PlayStation 4 and PlayStation 5. So I bought it for that reason. Because it is short. For $30, it's not bad. But the thing about $30 games is I would hope there'd be at least a little bit of replay value. But I don't really think it's there. It's a fun little game. I love the cat, and I love the story was really nice. Puzzle-wise, it was just super easy. There was never a time where I sat there and struggled. Well, I take that back. There was one time where I struggled to find something, but it wasn't story element. I had to find, like, a soda machine vending machine, and I couldn't find it. I spent, like, 30 minutes looking for it, and I was like, all right, I'm just going to Google this. And it turned out it was, like, hidden in the perfect little nook that I never go to. And again, it didn't really advance the story at all. But, like, there were even several times where they were, like, this would advance the story, but I happened to run into it and do it. And then it was like, oh, hey, you need this. I'm like, oh, hey, guess what I have? I already have this. So I would say the puzzles are a little disappointingly easy. But again, it's such a nice little story. Like, I don't want to sound like I'm kind of shitting on it too much, and I don't really mean to do that. I enjoyed my time with it. You know, for a $30 gaming experience, I could have wasted my money so much more. I could have gone to McDonald's a few times, could have done something. This was definitely worth it. I definitely think it could be something that, as I said, my nephews would enjoy quite a bit. You know, they're like ages 12 or 11 and 15. So, you know, they're kind of within that good range of enjoyment. So if you do have kids or nephews or something, they could definitely, this would be like a fun little experience for them. It looked good. It's just, I don't know. Like, it's hard to describe this game because it's basically just you explore around. The problem is there's like no real like cool collectibles. There's like memory things and then kind of little story element things that you get little badges for on your little cat suit. And I'm pretty sure I collected all the badges by just passively playing the game. So I miss some of the memory thingies that you get, but so as I said, I don't really know much more to say. I like if you watch the videos, like the trailers and stuff, pretty much on point on how the gameplay is. You're just a little cat, you get to run around, jump. It's very easy jump mechanics. You can't miss. You literally just hit X. You can't fall off. And I think that adds to some of the, I guess, easiness of it because it is very much like, you know, like other kind of platformers. You know, if you mess up, you die and you restart. Here, the only time you die is if you don't run away fast enough from some kind of pursuing attacker. So that is definitely disappointing. But as I said, the fact that it's free, if you have, you know, one of the higher tier PlayStation subscriptions. And keep in mind, you could even maybe upgrade your, you know, subscription. Because, like, it told me, do you want to buy the game or do you want to upgrade your subscription for $15 and play it? And I was sitting there like, well, you know, I could play it for 15 bucks.
Yeah, half
And I think,
price.
yeah.
And
But I
you would
think
definitely fit
ultimately it was good.
before they take it off the service because it's a short game, right?
Yeah, I mean, it took me, I think I really only spent about 3 days playing it in total because I basically sat through it probably about, you know, hour and a half chunks, 2 hour chunks maybe. So it's a short and sweet game. It definitely kind of has some similar vibes, speaking of other kind of short and sweet games, of like a Journey, right? Journey's not a terribly long game. It kind of has that same, except for Journey, it's a little more exploratory. You get really locked down in certain level areas, and it kind of really guides you to certain things. There's a couple open areas, but that's it. Most of it's very linear.
Okay. That sounds good. It sounds like ultimately it accomplished its goal of just being like a fun, casual game, immersing you in the world of like walking around as a cat and not being too hard. Or sounds Prince of Persia-y with the you can't jump and die stuff. So yeah, maybe I'll play it at some point.
Yeah,
My
that's it.
question, Steve, is how much of a cat person are you?
I'm a dog person 100%.
Okay. I've heard like different opinions on the game, and I think in general, the more of a cat person you are, the more you like the game. So I think people should keep that in mind.
Like, if you were to say, you know, rate it out of 10, I'd give it a solid 7 out of 10. Maybe an 8. I don't know. It kind of borders on that, you know, if I don't really like doing points, but this one would definitely be like a 7.5 if I were. Like it's not necessarily a 7 game, it's not necessarily an 8 game. And I think the reason why it's not an 8 game or better is because it's just there's no replay value for me. The only replay value for me is if I get stuck with my nephews one Sunday or one day and they're like, "Hey, can you watch them?" And I could be like, "Hey, why don't you go play this cute little cat game?" And then that's all I like that's my what I get to do. Because it would be so easy for them. And these are Minecraft kids and they do not like challenges. So this game's kind of like perfectly up their alley.
What are you saying about Minecraft kids, man?
Hey, I have no problem with Minecraft players, but kids who grew up on Minecraft, at least from my experience, tend to always play Minecraft on creative mode and don't like to die and don't put the challenge in. And it's only been till recently that I actually saw my nephew, who's again 15 now, actually put in some challenging games. He still likes some easy games. And like, all I can think of when I was in middle school and elementary school playing Mario, where it punished you. Like, there was no easy mode in Mario. You had to suffer and lose and restart.
So. You had to get good.
Yes. All right. Yeah, it's still a nice little game. So definitely strongly recommend it. If I sound a little down, it's not really intentional. It is what it is. Yep.
Mm-hmm. Fine little game. So next up, we have Live Alive. Amro, you've been playing this on Switch.
Yep. And this game is a remake of a 1994 Squaresoft RPG that never left Japan. But, you know, you may have played a game that was like heavily inspired by it, like Chrono Trigger, which is what that, you know, director went on to do. It was a heavy inspiration for Octopath Traveler. It's even thanked in the credits for it. Hmm. And speaking of Octopath, it's remade in that same like engine. So it's the 2D HD graphics, where it's like really detailed sprites on 3D backgrounds, like that. It's like an isometric view. It's been updated for the modern day, and I think it's all the better for it. What makes this game kind of special is that it's like Octopath. You get to choose your starting hero, so you get a choice from 7 characters. And what's kind of interesting is that they were all designed by different manga creators back in the day. A lot that Western fans probably would not be familiar with, but still. But every character is unique, and they all take place in different time periods, right? So, like, you have one that's a caveman, you've got a cowboy, you got a kung fu master in ancient China, a ninja, a near future sci-fi guy named Akira, and a robot in what's basically a parody of Space Odyssey, 2001 Space Odyssey, and Alien. So all of these characters, basically, like, you can play them in any order. You can, and they're all actually relatively short, but they're all sort of tied together by a unique, or not a unique, but like a recurring element. And I'm trying not to spoil it, because it's actually worth experiencing the quote-unquote twist of the game firsthand. So, you know, once you finish it, of course, like, it all ties together in a way that becomes apparent, like, once you get to the end of it. So I've really been enjoying it. I've already completed all the individual stories. I'm in, like, in the back half of the game. Which, even then, you can still kind of, like, if there was a character that you enjoyed more than the others, like, you get to choose which one you want to take into the final chapter. And yeah, like, if you're a fan of, like, that style of Super Nintendo RPG, and you want to play one that, like, you know, you've never played before and is an inspiration for a lot of things that you probably enjoy, then I highly recommend it. The music's great. It's remastered. It was originally composed by Yoko Shimomura, who did the soundtrack for Street Fighter and Kingdom Hearts. So, you know, it's great. And yeah, the combat is actually kind of interesting, because it's not really turn-based. It takes place on a grid, so you can actually move your character freely, you know, like, on the grid, and then your attacks are on a charge system. So when you select it, some will go out instantly, or some take a moment to charge, and so you can be interrupted in between, like, when you select your attack and whatnot. So there's a little bit of strategy to get to the combat, but it's not anything like super complex or complicated. But like, again, what's interesting is that because they're all different characters, they all have, you know, unique moves. They all have, like, gimmicks to their chapters. Like, for example, one, the Akira character, he can read people's minds, so he can read NPCs' minds. Or you have the ninja, his mechanic is that basically you can play his chapter either stealth, and you don't have to kill anyone in the chapter except for like the final boss, or you can go in and kill everyone, you know, like you can choose how you want to play it. There's also another chapter like with the Kung Fu Master where you're training your disciples. Like you have to go and find three disciples and you're training them, and like one of them ends up being your successor, depending on how you train them. So like there's different things that can change, and you know, different things that will carry over into the end of the game. So it's, I think it's really cool. It's really not super long, so you don't have to spend too much time with it. And you know, I guess the only thing is it's a $50 game. So you're like, whether that's enough value for you depends on like how much you like RPGs. But you know, for me, it was like a no brainer.
How long did it take you to beat, or have you beaten it?
I have not beaten it yet, but I think my last, I can probably tell you right now as I pull my Switch out and I'm in the middle of a battle, so I have no idea. I'm probably around like 20 hours.
You should be able to, or at least I would have said go home and go to your profile on the Switch.
I mean, yeah. Once you start hitting 20 hours, it's like, okay.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like Stray, which is, you know, 5 hours. Which again, and again, I don't want to make it sound bad.
But again, like, so like what I like about it is that, you know, if you want to come home and play like after work, you can do one story, right? Like pretty much in one sitting, and then put it down and then do another story the next day. So like it actually, I like the flow of the game.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, usually RPGs, you always have an expectation of them being much longer than the 20 to 30 hour range. So this kind of sounds like a little something more easily that you could clear out all the stories in the main campaign.
And honestly, JRPGs tend to scare me because it's like, oh yeah, I just played that game for 200 hours. And I'm like, I don't want to put 200 hours into that game.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, you get like very instant gratification, you know, like where you get a full story with one of the characters before you move on to the other one. And like technically you can save and then switch out and move on to another character, but I've found that like the stories are so relatively short that you don't really have to. You can go through and just finish one of them before moving on to the next.
Yeah, that all sounds very familiar to Octopath, which came out 3-4 years ago or so. Yeah, and that was very loved and popular, so I'll have to look into this one. It looks pretty good. Sounds pretty fun. And we move on to a couple more shows from the summer 22 anime season. The Maid I Hired recently is Mysterious. We've watched episode 1. Episode 2 came out the day that we're recording this. I haven't watched it yet.
Mm-hmm.
But I was very unimpressed by episode 1.
I saw both episodes.
Okay, so you want to comment on anything that happened in the second or whatever?
So I mentioned this on Discord when I came on to try to valiantly save my my podcast members the time. I was like, don't bother if you haven't seen it. Because it's the same joke over and over again. You know, where, oh, little boy thinks sexy maid is suspicious, and, you know, she tries to, like, tease him because, you know, she's a hot maid or whatever, but he's, like, very straightforward and compliments her, so it makes her blush, and that's the joke.
Yeah, God,
and
then that's the joke. I hate that. Yeah. Like, you know, at least, like, thinking, I don't know how similar this fits, but, like, Duke of Death and his maid, at least that was a little more on the charming side. And there's also the stakes of this guy, anything he touches dies. So that was a part of the series. But here it's just, his trait is he's paranoid. And that's really all it is. Yeah, and the art sucks. Yeah.
Yeah. I was going to say, if you try to learn Japanese, you'll learn the word for suspicious very quickly.
Yeah.
Because he says it over and over and over again.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the art is not great. I think the maid is cute, but like it's just, even though there's not a lot of animation, like it's also very inconsistent.
Mm-hmm.
So it's yeah, I just my the biggest sin for a comedy is that it's boring. So yeah, right. I don't think it's worth wasting time on.
So I'm correct. Not. Go ahead, Steve.
I was just gonna say he's just not cultured enough to understand comedy.
Okay. I mean, I'm still probably gonna end up watching it anyway because I like trash.
Yeah, there's certainly better things you can dumpster dive for than this. Yeah. And then season 4 of Is It Wrong to Pick Up Girls in a Dungeon? So, what are we in for this season, Amro?
Well, go ahead.
No, I was just laughing.
I was going to say, we're going into the dungeon. but yeah, no, Steve.
Finally, you said, after season 1, I think. It's the last time they were in the dungeon for any real time.
Yeah, I mean, they spent some time in season 3, but...
it's not like exploring on a mission. That was more...
Yeah.
That was different dungeon stuff.
This one is very much going into uncharted territory, and it kind of makes the dungeon feel threatening again, you know, especially with the way that episode 2 ended.
Mm-hmm.
Thought that was really great.
Yeah, I mean, here's the thing. So episode 1 is pretty much just them preparing to go to the dungeon, right?
Yeah.
I mean, it could have really been episode 0 and just like, all right, we're going to go into the dungeon. Let's all get prepared. And, you know, they created their team, which is I'd say I like the team.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting enough team. So, and then kind of having them. Mm-hmm.
Who's best girl?
I mean, of the team or of Don Machi in general?
Of the team that's currently there right now.
I mean, if you don't say Aisha, you're doing it wrong, right?
I tend to agree. I really like Mikoto. And to that point, like, Mikoto got a lot of time to shine in the second episode. Yeah, true. And this is an arc that I think does a really good job of spotlighting, like, you know, all the characters, right? Even though, like, it starts off as like, man, Bell has gotten so much stronger and he's level 4 and like, you know, he's showing off like how much he's improved. But later as it goes, all the characters get some time to shine, especially like the Hestia Familia members. But but also I think what was really cool is that even though like obviously Bell's stronger, but like he's way more mature, and you can kind of tell just from the way that like he's being portrayed, like the way he's acting and the way he's being voice acted. So I thought that was a really nice touch.
I will say this, like some of my complaints of the series have been very well documented. I very much do like Bell in this season, like so far in being 2 episodes in. It was like, it really feels like this season, more so than other seasons. Obviously, you're going to have the seasons where, you know, he gets stronger and stronger. But this season, it feels like not only is he stronger, there's a fundamental change in who he is. I mean, even in his combat style, you know, when he was like, you know, fighting that big, weird, mossy monster thing, right? You could see how, you know, he, you know, normally you see him thrown into a wall and you're like, oh, Bell's been fucked. And then it's like, here it cuts to him and he's like got his feet in the wall and he's ready to go, right? Like, he's prepared, he is powerful, and they're letting it show. And I think, as well as not just showing the fact that he's powerful, but as you said, like, there's definitely more mature attitude to him, which shows real character growth. And it's nice to see. And, you know, we're running into season 4, which is, I don't know how many episodes, because I don't know if every season was only 12 episodes or not.
They have been, but this one's rumored to be 22 episodes.
Okay. So you know, I guess then that means, you know, you're roughly about 36 some odd episodes in to a show. Mm-hmm. So to see some real progress and some growth in a character, it's nice. And I think that's one thing where, even if I have certain problems about other aspects of the show, I think at least we're getting this kind of growth to characters, and that makes you feel like there's real progress happening.
But yeah, I mean, even besides all that stuff, I think this is probably the best production quality the season has, you know, like the series has gotten. especially like it's very atmospheric, and there's a lot of good shots in episode two, and but like that action scene was awesome, and I'm hoping we get more stuff like that.
See, that has been largely my complaint, a part of my complaint as well with the seasons two and three, right? Season one, we had a lot of dungeon and we had a lot of action. Season two, we had a lot of war games, and it was like low stakes in terms of, because I mean it was people fighting people, right? You know, they're not out to truly murder and kill or feel like, you know, their lives are on the line, right? So the action wasn't as intense. And then in season three, the action only, there was like, I would say three maybe major set pieces for action, right? And of course the final action set piece was like the best, right? And yep. It feels like starting off this season, we've already got, I mean, it doesn't necessarily rival what happened in the final set, like action set piece from season three, but it definitely kind of has that same, at least it feel to it, right?
Yeah, it felt intense.
Yeah, it felt intense, felt good, and it didn't, you know, end in a flash. Like it was, you know, a good few minutes of great action set pieces. So, and it was cool. Like again, watching him fight the monster and watching the kind of the flips of stuff, the flippy doodle stuff, you know, seeing all that kind of go in place, that was very well. Like I love the choreography. Made me kind of super hyped and excited for the season already. So, for all I know, though, that was like, okay, that's it. Now we got 10 episodes of them surviving and nothing happened. But, you know, I'll let that sit for a while. At least the first two, at least the second episode really was very hype. Again, first episode was all set up. I got no problem with the setup. You know, it's, you know, that's, you have to have setup to progress story. So it was perfectly fine, but that second episode definitely did deliver. And I'm actually glad that we get to talk about it on episode two instead of, you know, after watching only episode one, because I don't think, I mean, I wouldn't have, like, trashed on it, but I don't think I would have had as much to be like, ooh, this is cool.
Yeah. And I think, like, the fact that it being 22 episodes gave it that opportunity to kind of, like, take its time with episode one.
Mm-hmm.
Where it really was setting up all the Karen Machi is that it's not just about Bell. Like, obviously he's the main character, right? But like, I like everyone in his party, and you know, it's cool to see like characters returning from season two and season three, and so on to like actually become allies and help them out and explore the dungeon. So I think that's the biggest appeal right now for me.
Yeah, I think for me, I definitely want to see more dungeon stuff. I feel like I do feel like some of the stuff was washed under the rug from last season, though. The whole, because like that was part of my complaint was about the show, and I don't want to get into it fully, but it definitely feels like certain things like stakes and stuff don't really feel like there's nothing to come of it. I definitely think this season, the maturity gives us that a little bit of that kind of like, okay, now we're having something to come out of, you know, what had previously happened. But I do feel like the other major, let's just say, elephant in the room was the whole fact that they found out that monsters are somewhat sentient or can be sentient. And then Bell just to kind of like, you know, I'm just going to be a hypocrite. I'll keep murdering them, but you know, it's cool because I'm a hero and all heroes have to be hypocrites. I was just like, okay, that's kind of a bullshit excuse. I mean, you could just say that. Go ahead.
I think what he's saying is that like he has the resolve to continue fighting, even though like my thing is he can tell the difference between a monster that's trying to kill him and a monster that has intelligence. Yeah. But oh, you know, that's where the hypocrisy comes in. Yeah, that like, you know, he's killing monsters even though he wants to save the Xenos or whatever. But like to that point, like we already got even in the second episode that the monster that they're fighting right now is not your average monster, right? Mm-hmm. Like it may not be a Xenos, but it's way more intelligent than, you know, the fact that like it backed off after like hitting, you know, one of them with a seed barrage thing, like, and then you know, clearly it has tactics and stuff. So, you know, that's, I think we're going to see more stuff like that.
But see, the thing is, like, I definitely think it could have been somewhat interesting to play on that for him, and like, you know, the fact that he is a little more hesitant on monster stuff, and like almost even maybe pay a price for that, you know, because like, you know, maybe he realizes, oh, it's a Xenos, he just wants to maybe talk, but why can't there be evil Xenos, you know, like,
right.
Yeah, like, yeah, they might be sentient, but they still want to, you know, do bad things. Like, I feel like that could be like an interesting angle. Maybe they'll go that way, maybe they won't, but I don't know. I do feel like they did wash it under the rug a little bit. They were just kind of like, all right, let's just move on to this. But I am still at least interested to see where they take some of these elements going forward.
All right. Sounds good. So there is nothing else from the season that we hadn't covered. So that wraps up that. And thus concludes episode 326 of the podcast. Anavision.org, the website. Check us out there. All of our links. Check us out on Discord also. And I don't really know what there is in the future coming up specifically to plan ahead for.
It's kind of a quiet. There's like not a lot of game releases coming out yet. Like, yeah. Fall's going to be busy.
Mm-hmm.
Season just started, so there's not a lot of, I guess.
Yeah, and we're all kind of down on this season of anime, so.
Yeah, like our season update is going to be like 4 minutes long, because we're going to talk about like six shows.
Yeah.
But I mean, I'm sure there's stuff, topics, news we'll get to.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So do stay tuned. For Steve and Amro, I'm Jerry. We will see you next time on the Anavision Podcast. Believe it.